England and currently in the University of Vienna, and he's going to be talking about quantum state tomography in the real world, if Vienna counts as the real world.
Well, it's kind of like the real world, but 20 years behind everywhere else. Okay, so here's the outline that I'm not really going to talk about very much. There are a bunch of people there that I have either worked with or spoken to and have provided very useful feedback on all of the stuff here. And basically, this is what the talk is about. Several years ago, this was, I guess this must have been in about 2005, in a conversation that I was having with someone that I won't mention is an organizer of this conference. And we were both, in fact, going, you know, this seems like we know how to do it. And then over the next couple of years, we just kept on finding lots of little things that kept making it more and more irritating and less clear exactly how to do it. So it turns out that the devil's in the details. Here's a data set. It's real data taken from this paper. And if you do the standard maximum likelihood tomography on it, then you get this density matrix. Looks kind of nice. Has a reasonable entanglement, so yeah, that's all good. Now, let's consider this. So this is the penalty function for the standard maximum likelihood. You have basically something which is a least squares deviation of the measured data from the data that would be predicted by your density matrix estimate. And you want to make that as small as possible. What happens if instead of making this error here, this normalization factor, instead of making it based on the predicted count value from your theoretical density matrix, you just change it to the error in your actual measured data? Well, the equation's kind of symmetrical in those two on the top. Doesn't seem like it should make a big difference to me. Certainly didn't when I first did it without thinking. And you run the reconstruction, and you get a state which looks very similar, but the tangle's better. Oh, that's good. It's not a really convincing argument, however, to try to work out what should go into the paper. In fact, in this paper, we didn't even notice the difference at that time. One of the reasons why we did it originally was because old computers, slow optimization techniques, really, this one was faster and worked more reliably. And so that's what we did. And it was just basically that it was a practical thing. We, you know, it was like, well, this isn't going to make any difference, and this one actually seems to work quicker on our computers. But obviously, there's a difference, and you need to work out why there's a difference. So the basic idea of tomographies, and everybody knows about tomography here, so I'm not trying to teach people how to do it. Basically, what we've got is, you know, at some fundamental level, we've got copies of a source, copies of a state. We want to do measurements on it, and then from those measurements, invert that to give us some state. Now, I'm going to be an experimentalist and say, look, I want that inverted state to be physical. And everybody wants that. And in fact, as an aside, if those measurements are informationally complete, you get the complete density matrix, at least within the subspace that you're looking at. For the purposes of this talk, most of the time I'm going to be referring to a certain basic framework just so that I don't need to keep mentioning things all the time. So a single measurement for me is going to be the count for a single projector. That means, for example, the number of counts I get when measuring a single photon to be horizontally polarized. Not H and V, just H. I'm going to basically generally use maximum likelihood reconstruction, which means that my count values, I'm going to interpret as an approximate approximation to the probability of overlap between my reconstructed state and the observable that I'm measuring. And because I'll be looking at photons most of the time, I'm going to use Poissonian count statistics, which means that my standard deviation is just related to the actual count, very simply. Now, basically, when trying to write my thesis, I decided that I better actually try to justify a whole bunch of these things that people just used in tomography. So I wanted to take a fairly pragmatic approach. I didn't care how I did things. I just wanted to know, does it work? Can I do it better? And does this one work better than that, or vice versa? So I'm gonna try not to make philosophical value judgments. So for example, I'm gonna try not to enter into the Bayesian maximum likelihood argument as much as possible. There are going to be some issues which are fundamental issues, basically relating to the fact that, you know, quantum measurements are inherently noisy, and there are going to be some issues that are purely practical issues arising from non-ideal behavior in experiments. Basically, what I'm going to try to do, I'm going to cover as much of it as I can, skip through some things if necessary. I'm going to go through various parts of each of these stages, the measuring the data, analyzing the data, and interpreting the results. And I'm going to look at that, taking this fairly pragmatic approach and trying to work out what's the best way to do things. Okay, so one of the first things I looked at was that arose when I was doing experiments is actually what measurements do I want to take? So in 2001, Daniel James and a few others wrote a paper which basically described how to do tomography with photons, and particularly how to implement the maximum likelihood algorithm. And they used a minimum set of measurements, which was based on the Stokes parameters in photon language, just measuring horizontal, vertical, diagonal, which is the real superposition, and circular polarization. One of them, say, right circular, which is the complex superposition. This was going to cause us problems in various times when we this was going to make things tricky. So we said, well, what else can we do? And the most obvious generalization, the simplest one, was just to add in the other ones. So instead of just measuring H, V, D, and R, I'm going to measure all of the standard basis elements. I'm just going to randomly switch between, I'm going to use the polarization shortcuts a bit during this talk. So that's the definitions there. Bear with me. And if you're not a photon person and can't remember what my obscure definitions are, just stick up your hand and ask. Okay, so what are the advantages of the different systems? Well, for the minimum measurement sets, obviously has the advantage that you can get long, you can count for longer per measurement because you've got fewer measurements, which means you get better statistics per measurement. Right. So, well, for the rules of the game was I wanted to do my PhD in a finite amount of time. So when I'm doing a tomography, it better take some reasonable amount of time. And so time was the thing that is my restriction. Now, whether it's photons and you've got sort of an average number of counts within that time, or whether it's ion traps and you know that you can do so many measurements per second, time is somehow the reasonable limiting factor. Okay. But one of the problems for minimum measurement sets is that the stability, you need to keep the experiment stable for the entire data set. Now, this is not too much of a problem if you've got a bright source and you're only doing, say, 2-qubit tomography, then, you know, 16 measurements, if you're only doing 30 seconds each, is 8 minutes or so plus moving times. You only have to keep your experiment stable for 15 minutes, which normally is not too bad, although not always the case. So that's one potential drawback. The other option was the overcomplete measurement sets. And here we have some information redundancy. And this means that it's more insensitive to noise, or at least I suspect that that's what it will mean. That's certainly what we assumed. And it also gives you shorter stability time requirements. So for example, if you're measuring all of these, And you know that summing each of these pairs should give you the same value, then somehow in your experiment you only need to actually keep it stable while you're doing one of these POVM sets.
So I guess I don't understand how this is a different property than being insensitive to noise, or maybe it's just...
So insensitivity to noise, okay, that's more of a fundamental issue. The second one is a practical issue. So the fundamental issue of insensitivity to noise. I give you, let's forget about states which are going to be almost pure and therefore you're going to get unphysical states out of your tomography. But let's imagine I give you a minimum set of measurements and it's kind of a mixed state, so that what you get when you just do the basic linear inversion, you get a physical state. Now, your answer, your tomographic reconstruction is going to precisely fit your measured data.
I was more interested in the other things.
Yes. So this is where if you take more measurements than you need, that can no longer be the case. You can't get a single reconstruction.
I was more interested in the stability time. You're going to take all these measurements. So why is it okay to do them in separate sections for the overcomplete measurement sets, but not for the minimum one?
Okay, so I'll get to that later, and explain that in more detail. So on the informational redundancy, just my bias to this was that when I was in first year, if I had to measure a system and determine the equation to the line, in physics, now in chemistry, they normally make me take maybe 3 points. But physics, we took a whole lot more than that. Basically, you don't just measure two data points. It's true that you can measure the the slope of a line to a reasonable accuracy with two data points, if you know that it's a line, to some accuracy given what the accuracy of your measurements are. But nobody does that. So to me, this is a fundamental problem with doing tomography with minimum measurement sets. Why are we actually consciously trying to do a reconstruction technique which gives you something that perfectly fits the data? That doesn't really make sense to me. Okay, but in the spirit of taking a pragmatic approach, I want to just actually do the comparison. So here we have simulations. So basically, over the surface of the block sphere, a single qubit pure states, where for the minimum set and the overcomplete set, they're the same number of total copies. It's just you have more per measurement in the minimum set, and with Poissonian statistics. And you can see that what you get is, so the fidelity, when it looks more red, that's better. This is the fidelity with the actual state. Because I'm doing simulations, I know what the state was supposed to be before I added the noise to it, and therefore I know what the reconstruction fidelity is. So basically, I take a known state, I calculate what I expect the counts to be, I add noise to that, and then reconstruct it. And I do that over and over for many times per point. And this is what I get. That's a bit hard to read, so let's have a look at the unwrapped version. And we have here the minimum set and the overcomplete set. This is the fidelity, and this is the linear entropy, so the purity of the state. Now, because I'm only looking at pure states, the purity is also somehow a measure of how well it's performing.
I just want to make absolutely certain of something. When you say you're adding noise, that's just the shot noise, the Poissonian statistics, right?
Yes. Okay.
So you're not adding imprecision into the experiment, no. You're just doing a real...
Yes.
You know, same.
This is a fundamental limitation of the... It's sure. Just the fundamental limitations here. Okay. So from here...
So I'm still stuck on this completeness.
Yep.
So you're not allowed to measure the same basis twice, is that what you're saying?
No. It's just that if I'm measuring H, V, D, and R, I've got a minimum set of measurements for a single qubit. So this is the standard, the basic Stokes measurements. Is there actually a cluster here? Yes. So that, you know, from way back when, if you want to measure polarization, you have to measure three things plus the normalization. So you have to measure the linear component in two bases and the circular component, and you need one more thing. You can do this by either measuring an overall intensity parameter, or you can just measure something like B and add it to H. That's the basic minimum one. What I'm saying is let's measure the other ones as well.
Yeah, but I can't see how, why that would be better than just measuring the same ones over and over again. What's your intuition there? Why?
It gives you a longer baseline for intensity, right? It gives you, otherwise you're using the H plus B baseline for your overall normalization.
Okay, in fact, this is not the reason. As I was going to discuss later, you can do tomography where you include the normalization as a free parameter. So this means that all the data points are used to calculate the normalization. It doesn't matter what data points they are, what measurements you do, all the data points are used. But the reason why the overcomplete has some sort of so if you've got a Poincaré sphere here, okay. Now, forgetting about the normalization for a moment, I can measure a state by making one measurement along this axis, one measurement along this axis, and one measurement along this axis, and that puts me somewhere there. Now, I know that those measurements have noise in them, but provided my state doesn't predict something unphysical, I know that this reconstructed state will fit my data points perfectly. But if I measure both two data points on this axis, two on this axis, and two on this axis, now I can't just do a straight linear reconstruction, because it's how you do that is actually, now you've got overcomplete, now your set of observables is more than informationally complete. The inversion is actually, there's a freedom in how you do that. You can basically choose any subset of four or do some sort of weird average, or you can do it in many different ways. So I'm going to do some optimization to try to get a value which fits all of them. So it's the closest possible to all six. Now, when you've got the minimum set, the only time that's going to predict something, the only time that your optimization is going to be anything other than the direct reconstruction is if it lies outside the Poincaré sphere, so if it's an unphysical state. But I'm ignoring that for the moment, thinking about inside. Now, when I have more measurements then, because there's somehow, I've got two slices, two bites of the cherry of trying to work out what the information is in each, what the position is in each of these basis elements, I've got some redundancy there. And so if there's some noise, so say there's some noise, basically, here's my true value, but there was some noise which brought it down to here, so it just moved me along the line. Now, in the minimum set, I have no way of diagnosing that. I have no way of working out the difference, finding out the difference between noise moving me along the line and actually the state being different. Whereas when I measure an overcomplete set, what happens is that now I can start to tell the difference because I've got extra measurements there. It can diagnose if it was just noise or if it was the real state, because the real state will affect all measurements, whereas just random noise will only affect might only affect one of them. But this is kind of my intuition. It may not work for you, but the point is here, I'm not really going to be concerned with that at all. The point is the proof is in the pudding here.
So are you sure that the results are independent of your choice of set of standard measurements? Mm-hmm. You mentioned at the beginning you could measure the identity as well instead of H and B.
No, it's very much not independent of that choice.
So it looks here like the set of standard qubit measurements that you've chosen it has a preferred axis. So
yes, absolutely.
Number of measurements,
the reason why that was the standard set of measurements, not because I chose them, is it was they were the ones that people used.
But if you use a set of standard measurements, including the identity instead of B,
say, right. So you can use different standard measurements. So let's move on, because I'll get to that in about two slides. Just here's, I'm going to skip over this. This was just some more simulations for two qubit states, showing that you also got asymmetries. So the point is that the results are very strongly state sensitive, and state sensitive also because they depend on your specific choice of measurement set. The overcomplete measurement set seems to perform better than the standard one, which was, I'm defining as the standard one because it was what everyone was using, as opposed to it's the standard one for any particularly good reason. It was, you know, largely historical. But is it the best set? And it's certainly not. A much better choice is to choose measurements on the platonic solids. So the platonic solids are sets of measurements, sets of positions on a sphere, which are somehow evenly distributed over the surface of the sphere. So the best measurement, actually, I don't know, what I haven't done yet is actually compared the platonic solid to HDR and the identity. I don't know what the comparison is on that yet. Something I've kind of been meaning to do, but haven't got around to for ages. Okay, but the tetrahedron is somehow the most symmetrical set of measurements that you can get. Now, it still has some sort of choice of axis because you have to orient your measurements in some way. But that's true for the overcomplete set as well. So this is why you're going to get state-sensitive results. And for example, if you look back at this one, this is why even in this overcomplete set, you get some hot spots where you get really good accuracy, and in between, you don't get such good accuracy. Okay, the platonic solids, they go from 4 to 20 measurements. They're actually T-designs, for those of you who know what that is. Basically, it means it really is a uniform distribution over the sphere. So then we did some reconstructions. These simulations were done by Mark de Berg. And calculated the average reconstruction fidelity, averaging over all states, pure and mixed, where the states were chosen distributed rotationally according to the Haar measure, and in the mixed, with respect to mixture, according to the Bures measure, which is a metric based on the fidelity, which is how we're comparing it. They actually, in the paper, we used another, which I, sorry, didn't reference here, in the paper, we use another metric as well, and it gives similar results. But in which paper or which? One based on the quantum Chernoff bound. But it does depend on metrics. Those two give similar results. But for example, if you use something based on the trace distance, it seems to give quite different results. So this choice of how you want to compare your final state, your reconstructed state with what you had, seems to be important somehow. I think that it was, okay, the trace distance was something based on the mean squared Hilbert-Schmidt distance, I think.
Only just quantum projection noise ought to be sort of isotropically distributed or whatever. And so I don't see how projecting along different axes can be better than just repeating measurements.
I think is an artifact of Poissonian statistics. So if you are measuring, if the state lies along an axis that you're measuring, then you get very strong zeros and very high fringe visibilities.
Right.
And when you get higher fringe visibilities, then what happens is that, so somehow for low, very low count values, although the relative noise is very high, the absolute size of the noise is extremely low.
So you're just sort of increasing the chances that you're measuring along a good axis for your state, maybe?
I think, okay, so I would answer this by taking an extreme counter case, which is that I can just as easily do tomography by measuring four states clustered around here. Now, my basic intuition says that that's not a good idea. It still gives me a valid reconstruction, but my intuition says this is not going to give me a reliable, as reliable and a reconstruction as evenly distributing my states around the CFD. Yeah?
So is this the set of the states that you have to measure this over complete is like for higher dimensional would be the eigen, all the eigenbases of the mutually unbiased spaces? Because that's what you do in single qubit, I was wondering.
Right, so yes, that's one way of doing it. I mean, it's just any way of getting more measurements. As far as I understand, platonic solids or something equivalent, T-designs in higher dimensions is kind of really an unsolved problem. And getting them, so having something that's really uniform in higher dimensions is apparently a non-trivial issue.
But mutual unbiased spaces are...
But they do exist, but they've been found by construction rather than...
For systems which are a power of prime, if the dimension is a power of prime,
okay,
you can construct...
Sure, so what I'm saying is that would also improve it.
But you have to measure both eigenkets of the, you know, all of the states. You know,
yes.
That's what you do in single qubit, not the...
Yes, that's what I would be proposing. Okay. But in fact, what I suspect is that increasing your measurements by any amount is going to improve your data. I mean, if you start with a minimum set and start adding measurements, provided you add them in some sort of sensible way, I don't think you're going to lose.
But, you know, the observer should be, you know, if you measure things, they should be kind of maximally non-commutative. Because if you have, you know, statistically, I don't see if they're like, if you suppose you do measure commuting observers, you obtain nothing essentially. So there are certain conditions for observer that you measure.
So. Right. So what I mean is, if you start with your minimum set and then start adding in states that are somehow in between, filling gaps in that measurement set, then I think you're going to start to win. I mean, this is stuff that we really haven't done the simulations for. So I mean, it's complicated. The details are non-trivial. And in fact, even the difference between 1 and 2 qubits, as I'm about to show, is non-trivial. So, I mean, okay, so here's for single qubit states, randomly generated states. You can see, so the basically the big home message is that the standard set that I described before is not the good one, yes?
You've got 5 minutes, so I was waving at you.
Oh, that was my 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Basically, the standard set that everyone used to do is certainly not the best one. Turns out, however, that the tetrahedron is also not the best one. So it's a uniformly distributed set, minimum set. But if I go to the cube, I can still beat it. Now, we've had great many discussions about exactly why this is the case. I think that it's actually because there is a fundamental difference between doing minimum set of measurements and doing overcomplete sets of measurements. So I really think that somehow as soon as you go over that minimum set of measurements boundary, you're going to start winning. Now, how far you keep winning once you've stepped over that boundary is an open question. Here, with a single qubit measurement, you keep improving as you go all the way up to 20 measurements. But with 2 qubits, that's not the case. So with 2 qubits, we see a strong improvement from the James set to the tetrahedron set. Sorry, Daniel, this was
the... Actually, Stokes, not James.
Stokes set. I'm going to blame this on Mark de Burgh. He generated this.
150 years ago.
Yes, yes. Yes, indeed. Okay, so the standard set is still clearly not the one to do. The tetrahedron does much better, but the cube still beats it. However, once you go above the cube, really the difference is negligible.
What do you mean by a tetrahedron for two qubits?
So this is the tensor products of tetrahedrons, yes.
Okay, so it's no longer a platonic solid in the higher dimensional.
That's right. It's tensor products of platonic solids.
Is the cube the tensor product of cubes?
Yes.
But the sick POVM does pretty well.
The sick POVM does pretty well, but actually not that much better than just tensor product of the cube.
But that is a minimum measurement.
Exactly, it is a minimum set in the bigger dimensional space.
Yeah, that's what matters.
Right. So what I suspect, so this is, I think that this is improved because it's much more uniformly distributed within the higher dimensional Hilbert space. But the cube, which I have to say is a hell of a lot easier to implement, actually does pretty much as well.
Yeah.
So
you didn't do the 2-qubit Victorian bias spaces.
No. So I haven't done 2-qubit uniform over complete sets in these measurements. Basically because entangled measurements are a bitch.
But stay tuned. Rob will talk about that later.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're good up to 2 qubits, but if you want to go higher, you need to have even 2-4-body interaction part. You know?
Right. Well,
a
large part of my PhD was just trying to do entangled measurements, and even that's not trivial.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know. Yep.
Have you done the calculations just to use these T designs in this space, regardless of how much entanglement's in the measurement? Forget practicality.
So the sick POVM is one. That has entangled measurements in it.
But
so that is the uniform minimum set in the higher space. We haven't,
yeah.
Yes. What we haven't extended this beyond that. The obvious one to do would be the sick POVM plus all the opposite, all the orthogonal. Well, what does it mean to have an orthogonal state of 2 qubits? It's not so trivial. So I mean, we have.
Is that the problem that it's hard to extend naturally, like with the platonic solid?
One of the reasons, yes. I mean, it's on the cards of things to do. It just hasn't been done yet. Is this the end of my total time or time?
You've got there's 10 minutes
questions.
Before we have to actually. So
okay.
If you can wrap up and we can have a discussion. That's the idea.
Okay.
Before you say anything more rude about my work.
Right. So this is the first point. These are the beginnings of experimental measurements of the platonic solids. Something I'd like to talk about. This, by the way, is sometimes what data actually looks like in the lab, where these are the normalizations. So that should be a flat line. Air conditioners are wonderful things. That is pretty much the timescale for the cycle of the air conditioning in the lab. Now, okay, so I'm going to then, in just a couple of minutes, without describing these, just tell you what I was going to tell you in the rest of the talk. So some other places where you can really start to tinkering to make a difference. One was getting back to the thing that I said at the beginning, which was using standard maximum likelihood and changing the penalty function arbitrarily. I did some simulations on that, and it seems like at the moment the fixed weight is a fairly preliminary. It's by no means a comprehensive analysis of this, but it seems like the fixed weight ones do actually do better in terms of getting a more accurate reconstruction. And the last thing I wanted to talk about, so errors, as we're seeing, is a very, very important and hot topic in tomographic reconstructions. My approach to this was to go, well, okay, we've got, so I also don't like a technique that just gives me a point in space and says that is your measurement, that is your state, because I go, well, but I, when I'm playing with the data, not the measured data, but you know, just putting in random data into tomographies, I can put really bad data in tomographies, nonsensical data, and still get a state that looks really nice. So if I can put really crap data into it and still get a state that looks really nice, then what I've got to have is some way of saying, well, this reconstruction, how well does it fit my data? So I have defined something called a fit quality, which is very closely related to a reduced chi-squared function. And this is the simple version, and there are problems with it which were pointed out in Netherlands last year, but you can do better. And this has some nice properties, which I don't have time to talk about, but if people would like to hear about that later or some other time this week, I'd be happy to talk in more detail about that too. So at that point, I'm going to wrap it up. And